What does it mean?
I don't think so, Manny.
What's happening in Russia? Hello, hello, hello. Anybody there?
Where did we get up to yesterday? So we spoke about, okay, fine, if you have to do what you want for that. I think it's a pretty straightforward message. It obviously has much bigger undertones in it for those that are interested in understanding anthropology and the history of why women go to work and why men don't go to work. And obviously, there's a lot to be discussed. There's a lot called kachani asugya shelanu. It's not exactly what we want to be dealing with. That's how I went to go through quickly. But the vote's a vote, even for us. Forget about our daughters and our wives going to work. For us, if we understand, what's our takeaway here? If we understand that the panosa comes from Hashem, the ishtadlus is, whatever ishtadlus is, of Azeloka Shu, it's not connected to the ishtadlus. Let's make that a little bit more palpable. Let's say it's not directly connected to the ishtadlus. So then the ishtadlus has to be kosher. The ishtadlus has to be lefi d'rotzon Hashem. You can't start doing dodgy ishtadluses in order to try and make money. It doesn't make any sense. It's totally not logical. Since the whole vort of ishtadlus, according to this, we're going to take time and discuss other ideals about ishtadlus, but according to this, is that the vort of ishtadlus is to be makare shem shemaim, is to bring kovet shemaim into the world. How can you bring kovet shemaim into the world by doing something that's keneged the rotzon Hashem? That's obvious. How can you bring kovet shemaim into the world into something that can cause a chilul Hashem? You know, so there was once, I remember in South Africa, there was a, I don't go into the details now, but there was a certain thing to do financially that Al-Pi Halacha was 100% mutter. It was mamash 100% mutter. In certain gedolim even held it was a mitzvah. But I remember my Rebbe telling me that in certain circumstances you shouldn't do it because it wasn't 100% kosher with the government, and therefore if you got caught, to be chilul Hashem. It's mutter, nachinam it's mutter. Well, you have to be careful because it can be a chilul Hashem. If the ishtadlus you're making for panosa is to be makadosh shem shemayim, so then you have to be very scared of chilul Hashem. Chilul Hashem befehesia, v'gam chilul Hashem beprati. So we have to be careful about that, and we also have to be careful not to put ourselves into situations and into places and deal with people and do things which are not 100% kosher. And you don't see any brocha from that in the long run. If you hold back from those things, you get set to Ishmael. It's a nisoin. Remember, the Chovetz Chaim Soloveitchik says that the reason why we make ishtadlus is because Hashem wants to test us to see whether we'll do our ishtadlus properly. Will we be neeman to his rotzon in the way we do our ishtadlus? So yeah, you're being tested. That's going to be the avoider in the ishtadlus, is that you are going to be tested. And it's a difficult place to be tested. So you have to keep me in mechazak and remember that it's not your ishtadlus that's making the money. The ishtadlus is a test to see whether you're going to be makar Hashem Shemaim or not. That requires constant chizuk. Okay. Reish Aleph, I believe. Yo. Mina roi lahadgish, shiroi vrubim shal gadoi lea toira amitim, lo godlu bet toira beschus hakesev shikiblu mechameihem. Roiv Gedoyli Ador did not sprout and become Gedoyli Atoira in the schus of the money they got from the in-laws, from the father-in-law. Hametzia Sochicha, she Roiv Ha'iluim, she Ashpi Olem is Kol Hanos Olam Azev, a Kesef Rav Lo Godli B'Torev Yishamayim. All the big Iloim, all the best Bochrim in the yeshivas, who were given all the pleasures and all the benefits of Olam Hazeh and had wonderful marriage deals or whatever, very few of them grew into Torah and Yerushalayim. Very, very few. Dafke b'nei anim, she'omolo yoyim v'layla mitoich dochkus, lehavin es talmudom v'shinunu es ha'alocha. The dafke, it was the anim, the poor people who toiled and struggled, yoyim v'layla, in difficult circumstances, in the hot and the cold, bli hafuga, Mehem tzmochu gedoyla teira amitim. Those are the ones that produced mamash gedoyli yodor. I don't know if any of you were ever in Rav Shaina Zatzal's house. I don't know if any of you went there ever. I mean, it was unbelievable. I once took a group of not from Balabatim, but Balachuva, a group of about 20, 25 guys, took them to meet Rav Shaina. They were shocked by his house, and yet at the end of the trip, they were here for like 2 weeks. At the end of the trip, we did a lot of stuff with them. At the end of the trip, we all asked them what was the highlight of that trip. They all said it was being in Rav Shaina's house. Besides him, he was just so sweet and nice or whatever. But he came from America, you know, came from Pittsburgh, whatever. He was used to the comforts of the world. You can't believe his house. There was no gashmis. There was nothing there that even resembled anything connected to this world. I mean, it was just, you know, it was a rickety table. There was a bed in the corner. There was another table. There was svarim everywhere. The kitchen was like the size of your iPhone. But the simcha that raged in that house, I mean, it was unbelievable. And you know that you saw Rav Aaron Leib's house. You know, there was a lot of talk about him and whatever. See, Gedolei Hador, Gedolei Hador. That's how they developed. I'll tell you a maisa I heard from Mordechai Miller about Rav Dessler. I don't know how well known this maisa is. He said he was the person in the story. So Rav Dessler rented an apartment on the second floor of a building. The owners lived downstairs, and he rented the upper apartment. When the owners were nifta, so Rav Miller said to Rav Dessler, you can buy the apartment. Yeah, you'll get a loan, you'll get a mishkanta, you'll rent out the bottom apartment, and that'll pay off the mishkanta, and you can live upstairs rent-free. I mean, that's a good deal, no? Anybody want to give me a better deal than that? You're paying rent now. Nothing changes, and you get rent-free. Anybody want to tell me there's something wrong with that? Who would say no to a deal like that? You know, anybody here want to tell me that they wouldn't take a deal like that? You know what Rav Dessler said? There's no ways I'm doing that. I don't want to be mechubah to bricks. I don't want to feel that I am connected to bricks. Now, I'm not telling you shouldn't do this. If somebody offers you a deal like this today, Mustama, in today's world, we're holding whatever, you should do that. I'm not saying not. But Rav Dessler didn't want to be disconnected, didn't want to be connected to this world more than necessary. So you rent. It's not your bricks. It's not your house. You pay the rent. You go, you come, you go. Different mahalach of how people approach the physical world. We come very influenced, very influenced. You have to admit that it's there, it's a reality, by the Western world, by Western thinking. You know, that the happiness is connected to wealth, and you have to have this, and you have to have that, and you have to have so much, and you have to have so little. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with having that. There's not the were gedolei hador that did have the physical comfort and were. Yeah, and did turn out to be Gedolei Hador. Of Yisrael, yeah, the Abterov was unbelievably wealthy. You know, Rabbi Yehuda Nossi was legendary for his wealth. I'm saying there were. Aval, you have to know so that money comes with problems. It comes with klalos. You have to take the big nisun, not posh. But we see today, you see it today as well. You see it today. The best Bochrim that get the, you know, they get the three Deeras and the four Volvos, and nothing. At the end of the day, you don't see too much coming out of it. You don't. Unless they have a certain sneers, a certain midah that can handle that, which is unusual. Lord, you don't see big things coming out of it. Rabbi Akiva, la'achen isuyov, im rochel bito, shal kalba savua, gorish mi beisa shal kalba savua, vayim goru b'tzrif dal. Rabbi Akiva married the girl, you know, she was the daughter of the richest man in town, yeah? Rak tevan lemarashoseim hayulahem. They had straw, that's what they had. They lived in a little animal pen there, whatever. And that straw, that was their furniture, yeah? Vinay, v'sholchu lehem mishamayim es Eliyahu Novi zochu latoiv, kedei sheyachzik es libom. So Hashem sent Eliyahu Novi to Rabbi Akiva and Rachel to mechazik them a little bit, give them chizuk, whatever. They were having a hard time. For her, it must have been very difficult. She came from unbelievable wealth to live like that. No, not possible. Yeah. Eliyahu Novi nira lehem ka'adam mi'ashuk, hudofek bedelet tzrifim, v'itchanen shiitnu lo ma'at teben. Eliyahu Novi got dressed up like a guy from the shuk, a poor man, knocked on the door and begged, please, I need some straw. I don't have anything. I need some straw. Boy, mishish to yold the ben, the ain lo dai teven, the shiva love is haracha noilot. He explained that his wife had just had a baby and he didn't have enough straw for the baby to lie on. Nosra Rabbi Kiva Rochel is a teven, so they for sure they gave the teven. V'hitnachamu me'ayedi shi'esh anashim ani mehem shafilu teven ein lehem. V'em somru v'chelkam. We're in the Dorim Daf Nun if you want to go have a look at it. What was the chizuk? They realized there's people that don't even have teven. Look how lucky we are. We at least have teven. The people that don't have teven. Rabbi Victor Miller Zatzal used to keep a book. They found on his nifta, they found books, pages and pages of things that had happened to other people or hadn't happened to other people that happened to him or didn't happen to him. Like good things that happened to him that didn't happen to other people and bad things that happened to other people that didn't happen to him. He used to write it down and thank Hashem. His next door neighbor broke his legs. He used to write down, I didn't break my leg. You know, you're always better off than somebody. You just focus on that. There's always something in the chazuk. So that was the basis of the chizuk, of what he wanted to be chizuk. As Rabbi Yankov Galinsky, Zatzal, asked the following question. Think about it. It's an obvious kasha, yeah? Madua bochel le'a novi b'derech zu k'day lo'eres rucham shol Rabbi Akiva v'yishter rocho. Why did le'a novi use this methodology of being mechazek, Rabbi Akiva and his wife? Where ima yenoisen lem kesef, or you smeichim yoisa? Why don't you just give them a check? Just give them some money. Give them money. So go live in a normal house and buy some furniture. You know, let them win the lottery or whatever. Give him a gold coin or something. Why are you mechazek him like that? You leave them there in the horrible situation. Mechazek them a bit because the other people are worse than you. Well, good question, huh? V'anu Rabbi Yankov Galinsky, those who knew Rabbi Yankov Galinsky, yo, honored Rabbi Yankov Galinsky, al kushisoy, shemay noitlam al kesef, because had he given them kesef, hayumatzeich me Rabbi Akiva kolo yoysa avrech koil mutsuyan. What would have come out of Rabbi Akiva was a good avrech, very good avrech, for sure. Ulam lo yatzeimek memenu atana kodesh Rabbi Akiva, but Rabbi Akiva wouldn't have come out of that. The Tana Kodesh that called Torah Shabbat Pei stands on his shoulders wouldn't have tzomach from such a thing. Kedai ligdol ulegir lemadreig gevua zu hayo alav lichyoit chaytzar. Tzar doesn't mean suffering. Tzar means mitzumtzam. You have to live a narrow life. A person wants to become a Godel b'Israel. You can't be involved in all the other things. Chaim sheli stak b'pemuot. You have to be satisfied with a little. I want to come back to that now because that's one of the most important yesoidas of being able to take our betochen further. Everybody here wants to improve and stretch themselves in betochen a little bit. We'll see one of the tools, one of the things that helps to take that much further is a thing called the istakbuk b'miut. And istakbuk b'miut, we need to translate it into what it means to us. You know, that doesn't mean get all your furniture out the house and, you know, order one of these big bales of straw. No, no, it's a little, that's not, that doesn't work for us. So we have to see what it means for us. So I want to come back to that. By the way, Rabbi Kiva actually was zoiched to a lot of wealth afterwards as well. He went through the difficulties, the sufferings, the hardships, and but in the end, he was given a lot of wealth. Whoever makaim the Torah in poverty will eventually makaim the Torah in wealth. V'chein HaKadosh Baruch Hu shlach lo es b'chosav v'hi ashir oto, k'fi shekosav, b'erchas Hashem hi tashir. The brocha of Hashem, that's what makes you wealthy. You want brocha in your life. You want Satad Ishmaya. That's what a person needs. Wealth doesn't always bring brocha and shalom and good things into a person's home. You want brocha. Kamu alein liskor shi'ishtadis einu ela achonis kli l'b'erchas Hashem. If we machazek habetochen in Hashem, hazal mafanes lakol. Well, you'll bench with a bit of kavana. The first brocha, you'll say a bit of kavana. You'll think about what you're saying. You realize that's where it is. Hazal sa'ilam bekuloi betuvo bechein. Yeah, the elephants, the ants, the birds, the wild. Hashem takes care of everybody. He can feed everybody. Okay, he can look after me as well. Once a person has a bit of betochen, then he's able to start choosing correct ishtadlises, doing things which are mutter, things which are fitting, things which are matim for him. He might be able to do things he enjoys doing instead of doing things that he hates doing because he thinks that's what's making money, so you have to do it. You don't have to come to do ishtadlis, that gray area ishtadlisim. Someone's doing posha daveras. There's things that everybody does, you know, that, well, but everybody does it. So then it becomes muta kind of, no, just because everybody does it doesn't mean that it's good. I'm just making ishtadlis. I know what he means by hachonas hakelim. I just want to tell you now. He's saying it, so I'm reading it, but I don't know what that is. I don't know what hachonas hakelim is. You make ishtadlis is one thing, and Hashem gives you panos is another thing. There's no connection between the two. I need to know even what this hachonas hakelim means. You prepare the kli somehow, and then Hashem puts it. I don't exactly know what he means. I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm just, I need lo yodeh maze in terms of how the ishtalus relates to the betochen. I don't know. Sharei hu b'chonas hakelim b'vado sukim anu v'ilu kamut ha-shefa b'chos ha-nesunim hayim b'yodeh shavayim. How much shefa and brocha comes into the kli you prepare, that's determined by Hashem. You're just making the kli. Okay, I don't know what part. Lo yodeh maze, I don't want to go into that now. I just want to go back to the stuck with the mute. Maybe we spoke about it once before. Is if you want to take your betochen further, so you have to find a point where you're not having charota, that you didn't make enough ishtadlis. One of the ways of taking your betochen further is deciding what ishtadlis you're going to make, how much ishtadlis you're going to make. Obviously, as little as possible. No one wants to make more ishtadlis than necessary. And if they work harder than you need to, you do whatever's appropriate. I'm not going into the cheshbon now. How you know that? That's a whole discussion. The bottom line is you have to get to the point where you're making enough ishtadlis so that you won't have charota afterwards that you didn't make more ishtadlis. Yeah, because if you have charota, it uproots what you already have. For example, if you did an aveira, chas v'chalila. So how do you get rid of the aveira? You have charota. Charota is one of the kelim of tshuva. It gets rid of it. If you did a mitzvah and you had charota, you wiped out the benefits of the mitzvah. You're on a lower level now than you were before. Because before you did the mitzvah, you could do the mitzvah and you did do the mitzvah. Now that mitzvah comes around again, you won't do the mitzvah because you had charota that you did it. So you've actually lost something. Same with the Aveira. On the positive side, you did an Aveira and you had proper Charota. When that Aveira comes around again, you won't do it again because you had terrible Charota. You regretted doing it. It was bitter. You don't want to do it again. Yeah? Just in principle. Yeah? So the same with Betochen. Person has a certain level of Betochen that each one has. Yeah? We all have a certain level of Betochen, whatever that is. Yeah? And it's precious. If you have Charota about the Ishtadlis you made or you didn't make or whatever, it can impact on your Betochen. You can damage your Betochen that you have. That's a Yosod Rav Dessler brings down. It's a whole shir on its own, but I've given it a few times. I'm sure everybody has heard it. If not, I gave it the other night on the Chovas HaLevavos. If anybody wants the recording, just ask Eli. Eli will have it. It's on the website already. I think the stuff's already put up on the website. We discussed different types of ishtadlis. So there I went into this whole thing of Dessler, but I've spoken about it in the Shiva a few times. So unless there's a real demand, I'm not going to go into it again, but that's the bottom line. That's the Yosod. You have to make as little ishtadlis as you can. And what's the minimum? How do you determine the minimum? That you won't be mitcharet, you won't have charota that you didn't do more when things don't work out the way you want them to. Okay? Just one quick example to make it a bit real. Let's say you decide you've got enough bitochen, you're going to stop working for a year, you're going to sit and learn for a year, you're not going to make, you know, like Shemitah's coming now, right? Because you're not a farmer, but you're going to decide you're going to work with the farmers and you're going to also not do any work. You close your office or whatever you do, close the shop, and you go and you sit and learn in Koilel for a year. Yeah. Now, if at the end of the year, you look and you say, that was really nice. Financially, things are not so posh. I think I need to go back and get a job. That's fine. That sounds good. You didn't have charota. You realize you need to make a new cheshbon, and you made a new cheshbon, and that's fine. You move on. Yeah. If you say, well, this is really gewaldic, you know, I think I can carry on. Yeah, we had less money, but everybody's happy. Everyone's living. We saw more siyata dishmaya. There was less expenses, whatever. I'm going to carry on. Also good. But if you get to the end of the year and you look back and you go, what did it for you? Now you're in debt and now you're this and you lost customers and as a shtiot, what were you thinking, you idiot? So there, you've just damaged the level of betochen you had. How? Because before the year started, you had the level of betochen to close your office and go sit and learn for a year. Now you couldn't do that again. Now you don't have the betochen to do that anymore because you had charota, so you've damaged your betochen. So we have to find ways to protect our betochen, and that's by making the correct ishtadlis. That's the first thing. The person needs to know what is his point of charata? Well, that's not a poshut. Okay, that's not a discussion now. But one of the ways you can stretch it so that you can get away with making less ishtadlus, with less risk of being toyal rishonus, of having charata of what you did, is the sugya bispakbet bemiut. Now, istakbet bemiut is something that's hard for us to even relate to. Most of us today live, even the poorest of us live today better than the richest people lived even 100 years ago, 200 years ago. Yeah, people that 100 years ago, the biggest millionaire didn't have running water. His bathroom was also outside. He didn't have a bathroom inside. You know, he didn't have air conditioning and a fridge and a door and a heat and a car and a, you know, and 150 square meters. I mean, you go look at the old ancient ruins and whatever, you see that the richest people who lived in the center of town or whatever, their houses were tiny compared to what we have. And they were the real big, rich, powerful, you know, the top 2%. Maybe the rich people had more servants, so they were able to, you know, live a bit more. You know, they didn't have to light the candles for the, you know, clean the oil out of the lamps. But the people lived very, very, very simply. Today, that's not the case. Today, we have a lot of gashmis in our lives. That's a big nisoyin, and it's there for a reason. But a person can be mistak b'miyut without changing his lifestyle. If you try and change it after, you say, yeah, I'm going to mistak b'miyut, you sell your apartment in Beit Shemesh, and you go rent one of these 20 square meter machsans there in Givat Shol, you know, where the young couples live, and now you're going to go mistak b'miyut. You can't live like that. You won't. It's not shaykh. We're not talking about that. That's ridiculous. Obviously, I think everybody understands that. Aval, there are things we can't say no to. Each person, you have to work it out for yourself. We don't have to say yes to every new thing, because once you get used to something, you can't live without it. I'll just take an example. Not that this is a good example, because today without air conditioning, I don't know how shaykh it is to live bichlal. But there are people that lived without air conditioning. And then when they got air conditioning, today they can't live without air conditioning. You know, you see a guy walking to work. Yeah, he walks to work, he's very happy. Then you see somebody riding a bicycle. Besides, no, he could get to work much quicker bicycles. If I was a bicycle, one day he has a flat tire and he hasn't got time to fix it, he has to walk to work. Wow, it's mamash tzah now to walk to work. But then he sees somebody on a motorbike. Phew, he's got to have a motorbike. He buys a motorbike. Now he can't live without it. The bicycle law is their law. Then he gets a car. Once you got a car, you're finished. You can never live without a car afterwards. That's impossible. Your car's in the shop one day being fixed or whatever, you can't go out. You're stuck at home. Your mama's like Sega. and that's the way it is. That's not something to be embarrassed about. That's normal. That's the way we are. So you have to be very careful to think carefully before we take on something new in Gashmias, because once you've got it, it's very hard to live without it. And who says you need it? Who says you need it? You sure you need it? Yeah, but the neighbors are good. It's not the neighbors. Do you need it? Can you live without it? Why do you want it? Check it out. Just use a bit of seichel. And before you start taking too many new things, which cost more money, so that when you don't get it, you have more things to mitcharet. You know, because you can take your betochen much further if you just mistak b'mute. On our level, whatever our level of mistak b'mute means. It doesn't mean I'm not talking about Shabbos and Yontif either. I'm talking about just, you know, you have to make a cheshbon for yourself. You have to think long and hard before you start bringing every new tzatzke and gadget and whatever into a house. You know, once you have a robot, that's it. You're finished. You know, how are you going to clean? Can't do sponge anymore. What's with sponge? People survive doing sponge. No, you have to have a robot. Yeah, but a robot costs money and then it breaks and you have to fix it and you have to get the latest model and you're always chasing. And then if you don't have enough money this month and the robot's broken, you haven't got money to fix it. And now you're starting regretting. You start having charota because, oh, yeah, I don't have this. No, if you learn to be satisfied and happy with what you've got, and you learn to enjoy the comforts you have, you thank Hashem, Boch Hashem, on a hot day, you look and the air conditioner is working. Wow, that's gewaldig. that's a prize. That's not simple. You know, the fridge works, Boch Hashem. Yeah, you know, you have what you need, and it's comfortable and it's nice. No, no problem with that. No one's here suggesting you have to live like a pas b'melach teichel. No, that's not relevant to us. But there are things that a person can do to minimize. And when you do that, it's much easier to stretch your betochen because there's less risk of being toler rishon as having charata. I think what I just said makes sense. If not, you must tell me. But it's an area to be at least, if you know what, even if you don't do anything in this area, just to be aware of it. Just to be aware that it's a sugya. It's a subject. I think that alone is already a big step in the right direction. Don't try and make big radical changes here. You know what I'm saying? That's not what we're talking about. You know, don't come up now and tell your wife, listen, you know, if Shana's wife could raise however many children in a little kitchen with a gas stove, you know, whatever, and that's it, we're throwing out the stainless steel. No. Obviously, that's shtiot. You're not talking about that nonsense. You know, you're getting rid of the car now and we're walking everywhere. No, don't be silly. But there are things, if you become aware for yourself, don't impose this on other people in your house either. Don't start with the kids. Somebody once told me, yeah, that's right. From now on, his kids aren't getting this and his kids aren't getting that. I said, that's all for kids. You have to start with yourself. You have to start. It's not for the kids. The kids aren't working on betochen. The kids are working on being kids, and we're working on betochen. Don't start coming home now and being, you know, that's it, you know, no more coke for Shabbos, you know, because I'm being mistaken with the mute. No, you'll be mistaken with the mute, you know. Well, Rabbi Frank Grossner has told us that his father was a machmi on Pesach. He didn't eat anything, mamash nothing, okay? Meat, potatoes, matzah, wine, that was it. There was mamash nothing. There was once a function and they put grapes on the table and he had to have something. Until he finished wiping the grape before he put it in his mouth, there was almost nothing left of the grape. It was his. It was the only time I ever saw him be machmi. You didn't notice it about him. It was more normal. He was more odd, whatever. I just used to keep like a hawk eye on him. I wanted to see how he functioned. But his son told me in the house on Pesach, they didn't notice anything missing. They had what everybody else had. There were sweets and chocolates and cold drinks and juice, or whatever normal, whatever people have in a house, whatever everybody else had, they had in the house. He didn't ever. You want to work on yourself, work on yourself. There's all the kids. So the same, yeah. It's not something you impose on your family. You start with yourself and you just become aware for yourself of, you know, maybe I could live without this, even if it's something tiny. Start with something mamish minuscule. You'll be unbelievably surprised at how much that'll help you take your betochen further based on this yusod. Anyway, that's just important when we talk about being stuck with the mute. First of all, it has to be practical, it has to be realistic, it has to be for me. I'm not imposing on anybody else, but you need an awareness. You have to be just aware of it and you'll see. You'll see you'll be able to go a little bit further with your betochen. Once you go a little bit further, then you can go further. It's like exponential. Once you have a bit more betochen, you can now go further. But be very careful not to step too far out, because if you do, you can have charotah, and that's the most dangerous thing. It's a very dangerous thing because you lose everything then. Then you have to start crawling back from the beginning again. You have to play with it a little bit. In other words, it's trial and error. You have to take on a little bit of, you know, stretch yourself a bit. If it doesn't work, okay, so you'll step back a little bit. But you're not going to fall off the edge of a cliff and have charotah. You'll just, okay, you'll readjust. You'll step back. You'll move. You have to play with it a little bit. That was a more odd issue. It's personal. I don't know how to help you do that. Well, you have to speak it out with somebody's objective. You don't necessarily, you should have a rov, but if you don't, you should speak it out with somebody who's objective and understands the sugya. And play around with it and see what you come up with. Anyway, that's him finished on betochen. Maybe tomorrow we'll discuss one or two other aspects of it before we go into Perek Dalet, which is tefillah. Tefillah, without even talking about betochen, tefillah is an unbelievably difficult, long subject, and I feel awkward talking about it because I don't really know what to do with it. I don't really understand tefillah too much myself, practically and theoretically. So there's too many kashas in tefillah for me, but we'll go through what he says and we'll learn what he says. He says some very interesting things there. Maybe look at one or two other aspects and dimensions of tefillah, whatever tefillah is. It's a big subject. And I don't like dealing with things that I know about. I'm not in it, so I don't know how to deal with it. Tomorrow maybe we'll just discuss one or two other aspects of betochen, the way he brings it down, the way the other little few approaches, and then let's assume we'll move on. Okay, fine. So that's good. I think it's important to discuss these things a little bit sometimes at a very practical level. The safer is more odd discussing ideals, but more important as well, I think, to at some point bring it down to the ground. I mean, I hope you found it helpful. I don't know.
I just wanted a bit of clarity. Let's say someone does one of these things themselves to try and increase their betochen, and so they go through a Baruch Hashem, they increase their betochen. Now that's a scary thing. Then what do you do? How, like, you're supposed to then up the game? You're supposed to then, you know, somewhat test yourself more. Or
was it scary? One second, I don't understand. Why did you do something that made you scared? What were you scared about? Well, why did you do something so big that you're scared?
Well, no, the scary thing is, Baruch Hashem, I was able to to increase my betachon in what we did, in what I did. But now if I do something else, let's say it doesn't work out the same way, but I've gone in like with this increased betachon, which I'm on a higher level, but now I'm scared I'm gonna fall.
Then don't do it. First of all, I don't know what you mean by you've increased your betochen. What does that mean? I've increased my betochen. I'm on a higher level. I don't know what that means. What does it mean? It means you're more relaxed. You have more menuchas hanefesh. You feel more secure. You feel more trusting in Hashem. What does that mean?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. So what do you want to do now? So you want to work less?
Let's say that was the test they did. You know, I put myself in a position where I was going to be learning more and working less. And I see that at the end of the month, I'm still okay. And at the end of the year, I'm still okay.
Good, fine. So thank Hashem and keep going. That's gewaldig. Now, you want to up the ante a little bit, yeah?
Yeah.
So wake up 5 minutes earlier and get to davening 5 minutes earlier and maybe work 5 minutes less a day. Start with something small. You know, you were working 5 hours a day. Don't go to two. You know, maybe go to 4 hours and 45 minutes or make one less phone call or I don't know. Yeah, it depends in your life where you are, but it has to be tiny, tiny. Trial and error, very small. You take one gentle step forward and then you test the water and then you see. If you can stand there and whatever, but say to stand there, you know, until it solidifies, then maybe take another little step. It's like mountain climbing, you know, just because you got to 20,000 feet above sea level doesn't mean you jump to 30. No, you go to 20,000 then 1 meter, you know. I'm saying you have to do it very slowly. You also have to be very careful that you're not using betoch as an excuse for laziness. You know, there's a big one of the big problems. There's two big problems with betoch. Okay, it's not our subject now. Maybe we'll talk about it tomorrow. The one is laziness, and the other one is when you become a bal betoch and you start imposing your betoch on other people. You know, when a poor guy comes to your door and he wants food, you start giving him a share in hilchus betoch. No, give him food. You know, don't impose your betochen on other people. That's number one. And number two is be careful that your betochen is not an excuse for laziness. It's very easy to fall into that trap. Very easy. Taminli. Very, very easy for the Yetzer Hara to make you think you're a big baal betochen. And really all you are is you're lazy. And you're losing your betochen as an excuse to be lazy. Betochen. Yeah, betochen. What betochen? You have to be very real with yourself here. And that's why it has to be very small increments. You can't start kofetzing. Because at the end of the day, the test of betochen is how much yeshuva das and menuchas and nefesh do you have? When you get a call from the bank manager, you see him coming up on your screen. How many beats does your heart miss? You know, that's the test. You know, a lot of tests like that, not just in money, a lot of different things. Shiduchim, this, health, whatever. You know, they avoid it, but you have to be very real with yourself. If you've got butterflies in your stomach, so acknowledge them, admit them. Don't pretend to be somebody you're not. Anyway, we'll discuss about this more. This is good. These are things you have to thrash out at a very practical level, okay? But we have to stop now. Mitzvah Hashem will carry this on tomorrow. Okay. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Rav Shah.